Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your pleasure commodity of music news. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
I got something to tell you. Hope you understand. I never meant to hurt you. It wasn't in my hands.
And that's Lemonade by the mysterious Sophie, whom John Pareles interviewed recently.
Indeed.
Isn't that right? What doors do you have to open to talk to Sophie, who will not reveal his name, doesn't perform live too much?
He does do DJ gigs.
Often?
Yeah, every few months. I mean, he played Output. He has appeared.
But not a lot of interviews.
Not a lot of interviews, which is funny because he's a really articulate guy.
So what was the setup? What were the restrictions? Were you in a room?
We were in a soundproof and echoic chamber. No, we were actually in a hipster bar in New York, in a hotel in New York. He rolled in a roller bag that had a synthesizer in it. But we were surrounded by people. It wasn't clandestine at all. Because he's done a pretty good job, though not a perfect job, of keeping his face out of the picture. And also, he's pretty obscure still. I mean, let's backtrack. He is a English producer-songwriter who makes these incredibly synthetic productions that register as pop songs with giant holes blown in them, to me. They register as pop songs that do the bare minimum, but also are incredibly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Often, it's just... Or it's entirely synthetic sounds at all times, except for the voices, which tend to be high-pitched women.
Sometimes I can't tell whether they are high-pitched women singing normally or women pitched up.
They could be both. It's true.
I can rarely tell from track to track whether the women are changing.
I think they're different, but I'm not sure either.
Mm-hmm.
The voices are part of the synthetic whole.
Right.
As you hear in Lemonade, it's a thrill ride. It's a playground. It's a jack-in-the-box. It's all kinds of things sort of zinging at you and tickling you and disappearing, and something else comes out of the mix and grabs you for a second.
Now, the idea of a savvy pop producer or pop maker, the record is called Product. I don't know if we've said that yet. The full-length album that Sophie has just released
right.
is called Product. And clearly, there's a sense of, like, super accessibility. These records are toys, almost, as much as they are sonic experiences.
Absolutely. I mean, he's compared his music to the kind of product design that makes you walk into a supermarket and pick something off the shelf.
Right. What I'm driving at is that he's not the first person to do this, to sort of put these ideas in your face.
No. And in a way, to me, the ideas aren't as good as the music. Pop is a product. It's a commodity. We've known this for a long time. Talk to the Pet Shop Boys about it. But what he's done is sort of revved it up for the increasingly short attention spans that you have to deal with these days.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statistic floating around that a radio listener gives something 7 seconds before deciding whether to change stations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to just, like, be there immediately and keep jumping out at the listener. And his songs do that with an incredible minimum of stuff. For instance, most pop songs have a steady beat going. His do not. The beat's defined by the bass line. It's defined by the silences. You might hear an occasional percussion sound, but there's not a steady dance beat.
Mm-hmm.
And yet
right.
he does dance gigs. He does dance DJ gigs.
What brings me into his songs and makes me want to listen for more than 7 seconds is the humor. I feel like I can't quite live with it. I can't quite create a space in my life to move Sophie in permanently.
Well, you'd have to be Buster Keaton. I mean, you'd have to be, it's slapstick to me. It's
right.
just like all this stuff coming at you and knocking you off balance and you stagger back and something else knocks you from the other side. It's definitely comedic.
Isn't there also a sort of Japanese super shiny aesthetic?
There is.
At work here?
And he's worked with Karya Pamyu,
yeah.
who is the Japanese model, though her stuff is actually darker than it seems. But if you compare her songs with his, they're sparkly and shiny, but hers have a steady beat. His don't. His have silence or syncopation there. I mean, that Japanese stuff bounces along steadily, and his keeps knocking you off balance.
Now, we should say that Sophie, who you know as Sam...
Yes. He's revealed that his name is Sam.
Mm.
Light Asylum, a group he remixed revealed or put on a Facebook post that his last name is Long. So he is Samuel Long, according to Light Asylum's Facebook post. He would not confirm that.
I think in your piece, you just refer to him as Sophie.
Right.
Yeah. We should say that Sophie is not just some weird guy working in a basement. Sophie has actually worked with very famous people.
Indeed. He is part of the team on Bitch, I'm Madonna. By Madonna.
Which we talked about in an earlier podcast.
Can't get away from her.
Now, when you heard that song, were you aware of some rogue energy in it? Was it one of those songs that made you look at the producer list and say, which one of these people is the wild card?
Diplo's on that, too.
Right.
And Sophie worked with Diplo. And Diplo's a pretty good sound meister, too.
Sure. So it's not like you could hear that song and think, Sophie. A star is born.
But on the other hand, I asked him what he did for that song. What they had was an acoustic demo. According to Sophie, he and Diplo said, Bitch, I'm Madonna is the hook. Let's bring this out. And they moved around verses and choruses, and they changed parts, and they brought out the pop stuff. Some of the, synthesizer ping pong going on in that is surely Sophie, but some of it could be Diplo, too. So I would not be able to pull his DNA out of that crime site.
And he's also been working with Charlie XCX.
Yeah, there's a Charlie XCX song called Vroom Vroom Up, which is very Sophie, which is clearly his sparse synthesizer stuff combined with her automotive imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pop song. It's where his sensibility might get more of a toehold on the radio.
So he's been releasing these songs gradually over the last couple of years,
right?
I mean, it started as a SoundCloud thing.
Right. I mean, one thing I'm kind of disappointed by product in is it's only 8 songs and 4 of them have been around for a year.
Also, the album format seems sort of ungainly for a dude like this.
Yeah, a bit.
Or maybe you disagree. I don't know.
They're all in one place, which is convenient.
Yeah.
He has released the album in a number of configurations. One is a black CD case. One is a sort of pink CD case with circles on it that kind of looks like a pill case or something. And the other one is a silicone product, which is about the dimensions, though I can't see the utility of it as a sex toy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 2 sort of rubbery prongs on it with various protrusions and things. So there's something going on there. And he calls himself Sophie, and his business card is pink, but he's not revealing much beyond that. And there's a song on it called Hard, which is delivered by another high-voiced woman. So when you have a high-voiced woman talking about things that makes me hard, it's an interesting gender inversion. There's stuff going on there if you want to read textual subtext. But me, I like the sounds. I really like the sounds. I mean, a lot of the songs he likes a monophonic morphing sound. That's what he calls it. And many of them are just one thing going on that's sort of surrounding you and changing and bouncing around.
What do you mean? One tone?
One tone.
Yeah.
That he's, repitching and detuning and changing the timbre of. But there's not a lot in there.
Like that upward whistle sound on Lemonade?
Yeah.
That sort of sounds like the Maceo Parker saxophone squeal.
I was thinking of it actually as the slide whistle in the Roadrunner cartoon, but
right.
Each to his own.
Right.
He doesn't sample, by the way. He doesn't like samples.
I can tell.
And the reason he doesn't like samples is because if you have a sample, then you are stuck with the audio essence. The tone is not perfectly flexible.
Sure.
Whereas if you synthesize it, it's perfectly flexible.
He's starting from scratch. He wants everything to be on the same platform.
The synthesizer he uses, it's not connected to a computer. It's a little thing with a little screen. I've actually talked to other people. If you use Pro Tools and look at it, it's like stripes going across a screen, and you can start getting interested in the way the pink line and the blue line, you can start getting visually interested.
Mm-hmm.
Bjork once said to me, it looks like a tapestry. And he said, if you do a lot of computer recording, you start thinking it's visually interesting, but then your ears have to tell you whether it's interesting in audio or not. So
she would say that, though, finding the organic and the natural and all that.
Yeah,
but he is decidedly not into finding the organic and the natural.
No, he wants the artificial. He wants the superficial. He wants the plastic. If you go to the SoundCloud page, all of the songs, the sort of virtual album covers for each of the songs are plastic water slides
right.
of various designs, which are completely artificial. completely sort of stretchable.
Right.
His aesthetic is not real.
They're like invented thrill rides.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
That don't even exist in the real world.
Or, well, they could. I don't know. I haven't been to every swimming pool.
Well, let's change gears and bring Grimes into the conversation. And let's hear a little bit of California from Grimes' new album, Art Angels. That's California from Art Angels, Grimes' new album. John, why are we bringing Grimes into this conversation?
Well,
beside the fact that her record came out very recently, too.
Well, here's another person with an arty perspective making pop from her own perspective. She comes at it in a way the same as Sophie does, which is to be thinking about its little component parts. But this Grimes album is actually less artificial than her last because she had to teach herself to play actual things like guitars and violins.
That's right.
I mean, this is actually more organic than Grimes has been. But she's also thinking about that very short attention span that you have to keep pleasing.
Well, the sounds are more organic. Are the songs more organic?
Well,
on this record, the songs are sort of complicated and layered. They have a different quality. From track to track, she really seems to be advancing this concept of, you know, subgenre is meaningless. I can do what I want. I mean, basically, it's all pop music, you know? But beyond that, sort of like, who is Grimes? What is this music? It's hard to get a hold on. Whereas with the last album, I felt like I could draw a circle around Grimes a little better.
But that's great. She's escaped the circle.
Right.
Pop is the great digester. Pop swallows everything sooner or later.
Right.
She said with this album, I, one person, can do all of these things. I don't have to be Max Martin with his army of collaborators.
Right.
I can produce. I can write lyrics. I can do these incredibly complicated arrangements. I can make rhythm tracks. I can do the album art. I can direct my videos. It's an astonishing, prodigious amount of work. I don't think she's probably slept in the years between albums.
Right. And she's also talked about the fact that this is a record almost entirely made by women. I mean, mostly her, but I think there might have been one man assisting with, you know, engineering or something. She's been vocal about that. This doesn't exist very much in the world. There's lots of records that are made entirely by men.
Indeed.
But there are few records made entirely by women.
And it's really accomplished. Actually, Maureen Dowd did that great story about female directors and screenwriters in Hollywood.
Right.
It's similar. It's like, it's not that the skills aren't out there.
I bring this up also because she recently made, she gave an interview to The Guardian recently, and she made a comment about that it was sort of messed up for a male producer to be using the name Sophie when there's so clearly a problem about the scarcity of female producers and female musicians being sort of pushed out of the picture.
I'm staying out of that one, though, because I think... I don't think he was trying to assume a female persona.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, she's higher on the radar than he is at this point.
Right.
It's not like he's using the female pseudonym to advance himself. I just think, you know, it's some other arty convolution that I don't quite understand.
Well, you said that pop is the great digester.
Yeah. Everything is swallowed by pop sooner or later. I mean,
right.
That's what pop does. It looks at genres, it looks at outsider sounds, and it sweetens them up a little and gives them a good tune.
But Grimes on this record is keeping an interesting balance between being a participant and being a mode of resistance. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, that song, California, has this great line, I get carried away commodifying all the pain.
Right.
Which is what pop does. It commodifies the pain in many cases.
Right.
She knows what she's about. It's very self-conscious. But it's also She's playing on their turf, though. She's playing in the turf of 3-minute songs that just go hook, 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 hook all the way through.
Well, for those who don't know, we already talked about Sophie's big league connections. Can we talk about Grimes's big league connections for a minute?
Well, Grimes got tapped to be in a writer's camp, which is what your big pop stars who aren't particularly songwriters do to generate material. It's a high-pressure environment where it's kind of speed dating for songwriters. You're combined with one person in the morning and you're supposed to come up with something. You're combined with another person in the afternoon and you're supposed to come up with something. And out of all these permutations, then the star can go and pick whole songs, pieces of songs, production ideas, and put together the best work of the committee. So Grimes was in one of these and said so in an interview. Apparently her song wasn't chosen for the final Rihanna album, but she was there. So she's contributing her little bit of outsiderness to Big Pop. But she probably learned from it too. I mean, she did her set list for her tour has two of the songs that she wrote with a guy, Blood Diamond. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty short set list. So those collaborative songs made for the pop machine are songs she's proud enough to do live.
There's this idea floating around that, you know, that everybody can basically move past the presumed limits of their genre and that listeners actually kind of want this now. You know, radio formats are being challenged. And
are they that much?
and because we have instant access to everything in terms of listening, you know, we can create our own personalities as listeners in a much more proactive way than we used to, et cetera. We've been talking about that for a while in an intellectual way. But I find that there is music happening now that is actually bearing that out. And I feel like this record is an example of it. Like I said, it's pop music, but I sort of don't recognize it. It feels blurry to me. Blurry in terms of its identity. Like, I don't really know what this woman listens to. I don't really know where her aesthetic home is.
Well, I mean, maybe her aesthetic home is on the road. Maybe her aesthetic home is the next hotel room and whatever happens to come up on her Spotify playlist. Mm-hmm. I'm not unhappy with that.
It's not a question of whether or not I'm happy with it. It's just, it's a strange feeling.
If you put the Grimes album on in the background, you might think at times you're hearing No Doubt. You might think at times you're hearing Madonna. I mean, you can see where the pop sensibility is in there, and you can find some roots in there. But the thing she's doing, though, is twisting and one-upping each one. If you listen to Flesh Without Blood, it feels kind of No Doubt to me. But if you then sort of burrow in and listen to the rhythm track is changing every verse. It's not like one steady drum beat like a band. It's Grimes doing variation upon variation, keeping your attention, keeping your 7-second attention span just so happy.
Why don't we hear a minute of that? So that was Flesh Without Blood from Grimes' album, Art Angels. Where do you think Sophie stands in this balance between participant and mode of resistance? I feel like what Sophie's doing is more like a, or at least playing with the idea of like a scientific investigation into pop music. It's more removed and more impersonal. I mean, this is a person with an alias who hardly ever gives interviews, whereas Grimes is out there. You know,
Grimes is a
very upfront media personality.
Yeah, media and social media and everything.
We know all about Grimes.
Do we?
Well,
I mean, her songs are still pretty cryptic. I mean, they bounce along like pop songs, but there are a lot of exegesis of Grimes songs. Mm-hmm. They don't quite explain themselves. Sophie does sound more to me like a sonic experiment, but he keeps saying, you know, it's about emotion. It's about pinning this emotion to this particular sound. It's about the sound that will trigger the emotion. which is a scientific thing. I mean, you're thinking action, reaction, stimulus, response. Whereas Grimes is more of a universe she's operating in, a literary and sonic universe she's operating in. But they're both playing with the sounds they want to hear. I mean, Grimes is actually more cryptic than Sophie, but Sophie is saying more constricted things. It's a complicated thing. If you want to go back to a Sophie song, we can go back to Just Like We Never Said Goodbye, which is really him coming as close to a pop song that tells a pop-like story. I mean, it's another high female voice talking about getting together with someone after a long time and they're still perfectly in sync.
Before we do, I want to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
In the piece, you asked Sophie why the name Sophie,
mm-hmm.
and he gave a ridiculous answer, something like, it feels good in
it feels good, it's like a moisturizer.
It feels good in your mouth,
right?
And it's like a moisturizer. I think he was pulling your leg.
Do you think?
But when he starts talking about how he wants his songs to be about emotions and emotional response, do you think he's pulling your leg there too? Are you willing to believe him?
I actually am willing to believe him, but these are emotions that are through a very cerebrally complicated process. I do believe him. I do think he's trying to do that pop thing. And I think he might be more futuristic and or more scientifically remote than your average radio listener. But he's getting closer to it. And I'm wondering, he actually moved from London to L.A.,
mm-hmm.
pop machine land. I'm wondering if he is going to sort of converge on more conventional, more emotionally legible pop while he's out there. The other thing that could happen to him is he could become the flavor of the month. You know, we'll use these fizzy synthesizer sounds for a while, and then, you know, he's done, throw him to the curb, get the next sound.
Then he'll make his singer-songwriter album.
Well, not so much him, but his producing career.
Right.
It's like, you know, they use him up, they throw him out. Radio gets tired of the sound, or someone else figures out how to do the sound, and it's trendy, and then it's not trendy. It's very cyclical. What he said was that his approach to – he's not trying to have a trademark sound. He's trying to have an approach of concision and succinctness. Conceivably, the individual sounds could change, but the approach of this incredible economy and rigor – he actually told me he took some of his tracks, he said, would have as many as 300 tracks in them to start with,
mm-hmm.
and he'd whittle them down to 20, and then they'd grow to 50, and then they would go down to the six that he can produce on that little synthesizer thingy of his. So there's a lot of thought going into each of those funny little notes. The question is whether the big pop machine is just going to want a couple of those funny little notes, or whether they're going to follow him into this landscape, this very sparse but also very active landscape that his songs inhabit.
Well, we'll say goodbye with Just Like We Never Said Goodbye from Sophie's record Product. Thanks, John Pareles.
Thanks, Ben.
But then you called me up the other day. I was shocked, but what could I say? And your voice exactly the same. And it makes me feel, oh, just like we never said goodbye. When you spoke to me that way, oh, just like we never said goodbye. And it makes me feel,
That is this week's show. Thanks for listening. You can read John Pareles on Sophie and his interview with Sophie, as well as Pareles' recent writings on Grimes at nytimes.com/music. And you can hear both Sophie and Grimes on our Spotify playlist. Thanks to our producers, Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and we'll see you next week.